and I believe to the teams. Great, thank you. So this is a timeline that we've previously discussed throughout the presentation. We've already had the November kickoff calls with all of the community teams. We're currently now having discussions with all stakeholder groups and all SOs and ACs. Upon the completion of the Cartagena meeting, we'll start accepting the specific request via template form through the end of January, with the intention of having these costs estimated and included in the framework for public posting in the month of February, leading to the period of public comments from February until March. At which point in the March meeting in San Francisco, the framework will be discussed in conjunction with these public comments. Beginning at that point, we'll begin working on the draft operating plan and budget, which will be posted for public comment by the 17th of May, per the bylaws, then leading to the forwarding of the final operating plan and budget to the board for approval in the June meeting in Asia.
Thank you very much. We have, I know Ron and Phil, Philip Shepherd had questions. Anybody else want to be in the queue with a question? Marilyn? Go ahead.
Thank you, Steve. Ron Andruff, member of the business constituency. I'm sure all of my colleagues here are very happy to see you and welcome you both and look forward to working closely with you in the next months and years to come. I also would take a moment to say thank you very much, Kevin, for all the work you've done. It's been a good collaboration, and we're very appreciative of it. So thank you very much. I wanted to just bring up a topic that we spoke about in Brussels. And so Kevin will help work with you on this. I'm sure the conversations happened internally. But we had some questions and concerns about compliance. One of the problems that we've had as a body within ICANN is making sure that the contractual compliance has been up to speed and met the standards that were established in the contracts, and it's been very difficult. So that's been one of the problems we as a community have not really been able to master. Now we're in a situation where after the June meeting in Brussels, we lost our compliance officer, and I understand there are still two other positions within the compliance department that have not been filled. So that's three people, and the head of it, obviously very important. And I brought this up yesterday in the open forum with Kurt, and he didn't really respond when we asked where do we stand with compliance. Our two issues, I think, from the cross-constituency group as well as from the BC are, one, do we have enough budget in there for compliance? And that was a question that we had talked about in June, so I'd like to kind of get an update on that if we could. And two, Akon, where are we with our compliance officers?
Well, I mean, I think the question that came up last year was that we didn't implement what we had planned to do in the FY10 plan. That's if you boil it down to it, that's sort of the essence of it. So we did have the budget in there. Obviously, there's in the FY11 plan, there wasn't criticism on the dollar amount. The criticism was the actual plan that wasn't fully developed, and we obviously have the staffing issue that needs to be resolved.
So we've actually done a couple of things. We've moved the compliance team to report to John Jeffrey, so that not as his role as legal, but as a manager of the compliance. And the reason for this is that we believe it's contractual compliance, so the legal team can give a lot of feedback on the contracts to the compliance team, and it should be more efficient to do that. We are also working on a posting of a new org chart that will reflect all of the changes that have been done in the organization. I hope to get it done in January sometime, passed by the board so that we can post it. That said, the open recs that are there for compliance have been funded in the budget. And we haven't yet identified the people, but we are working on finding the people for that team to staff it, to have it fully staffed. So,
do we have a kind of timeline on that in your vision? What does that look like? End of January, February? I think my concern, and I can't speak on behalf of the others, but my personal concern is that as you just said when you joined us, I'm not up to speed on the acronyms, and I'm just getting a handle on it. And believe me, this is a whole new country with a whole new language and society and so forth. So it takes a while to figure out what's what, who's who, and how do I work through this. So we really need those officers on board.
And
for us, it's a real high, high priority. So I'd kind of like to know from your point of view, any sense of that?
So, hiring is a... is not a science, but I believe that it's very important for us to find the right people instead of 1 month earlier or 2 weeks earlier. So I and we've moved right now to a consensus hiring process, which means that actually within the staff, before we hire anybody, they have to be interviewed by their manager, a couple of similar level people as the manager, as well as the people that they're going to work with, and if they are going to have people reporting to them, some of the people that will be reporting to them, and then we do a consensus. So the process is taking a little bit longer, even when you have the resumes and the people to interview and stuff. So I don't want to talk about the timeline, but I'm hoping that within the next 3 months, we should be able to have identified some people in there.
Thank you for sharing that process. That's helpful.
Thank you. So,
we posted it out to my compliance people, we posted it on the message boards for them, and we can help get people in these positions.
Sure.
So let's provide the talent to these people. Let's not just demand that they get somebody hired. Let's help them get somebody hired.
Sure, and we've posted these positions on the ICANN website as well, and we would appreciate any references for sure. So thank you.
Thank you. It's Philip Shepherd. I'd like to return to the point Christina was making earlier and your observation about the huge pool of talent that does lots of volunteer work here. It's great you're formalizing the process for input. Please do not require additional volunteer work of a unreasonable scale in order to facilitate what you're trying to do. Now, if you're going to do it at the SO level, the GNSO level, you've now got a whole negotiation taking place at council, diverting them away from the good work they should be doing on policy. So we don't want to go there. If you do it at the stakeholder group level, the registries aren't going to give a damn and the registrars aren't going to give a damn because constituency equals stakeholder group. That doesn't work for us. If you do it even at the stakeholder group here, we may have to have or the House level, again, we've got a negotiation happening before we get to you. And we don't want to go there. If you do it even at the CSG level, we've still got a negotiation between three of us groups here because of our uniqueness in the way that we instructed and put together. And we also don't really want to go there. So the only logical delineation is, to my mind, the constituency level, because that way we can manage it. And I think volume-wise, you can manage that too. So I would adjust your language, please, and make it constituency level. And if we want to make it broader, and if we do those negotiations because we all agree on something that's so important, then great, you might get three identical ones, or you might get a combined one. But the minimal delineation should be constituency, please.
So I appreciate the clarity. I think that the only question I have is if you know, we all know how we live within limited budget. The question is back to you. Are you not interested in prioritizing all the work that you want to submit? So if you don't get it up to the GNSO level, then how does the prioritization, or at a minimum to the...
That might happen, and that could... And if something is of sufficient importance, fine, you might also get that. But it shouldn't stop the ability to input at that level. Otherwise, you're forcing everything down to start negotiating on non-policy-related work within these bodies with volunteers, and that just distracts from my county's key mission.
Understand.
Okay, just a second on the queue. We have Marilyn and we have Bill. Did anybody else want to ask a question? And let me ask Chris, is there anybody in the chat room or anyone on the phone that wants to, we're so multimodal here. Is anybody on the phone that wants to ask a question? Hearing none, Kevin, and then Meryl.
Yeah, I just want to also address the earlier point that Phil made about the efficiency, not regarding who it comes from, who the submittal is coming from. That's what Akram addressed. But Marilyn, are you okay? The one of the friction points we noticed before was that community members, many of them are in here, were spending inordinate amounts of time drafting good ideas, and they just weren't being able to get through the mill so that they would pop up in our framework or in the budget. And so this form and the process is addressing that to make it so it's concrete, so it actually would take the intention is, well, you can judge us on whether we've achieved this, but the intention was to make it so that it's easier for you to submit the requests, the community member leadership to submit the request, and it's easier for us to evaluate it, estimate it, cost estimate it, and put it into the process, and then easier to get into the community feedback. So that's the intention. We'll see if we're able to achieve that. Okay.
It's an experiment, I guess.
Marilyn Cade, and I'm just going to, first of all, make a point. As chair of the BC, we have a vice chair, finance and operations, and we have a finance subcommittee. Mm-hmm. So for us, we have a point. We have responsible people. Any other members will be able to work with them. But I want to make a point that's important, I think, and I know the understanding the acronym. The GNSO is a supporting organization. It is not the council.
Okay.
The council is the council.
Okay.
And so that's just important to understand, because I think some of the points others were making is that getting something through the council, if it's about something other than GNSO policy, it can't be their priority. While the SO, for instance, broadly might have a priority on SSR. And that wouldn't fit within the council's area of responsibility, yet the various constituencies, stakeholder groups, might all want to be providing input. So I do think we're going to have to keep working on what makes sense in order to contribute to both the input and the prioritization. But I do want to thank you for convening those first chair calls, and I think we ought to keep that up.
Thank you.
Bill Smith with PayPal. I'd like to second the comments on contract compliance. We at PayPal remain concerned about compliance. I understand it takes time to hire, but we did see things in the plan a year ago, and understand that it didn't happen. Don't want to beat you up about that, but it is a concern for us. Another comment I would make on compliance is, and I'm on the Who Is review team, one of the issues I see is teasing out sort of the Who Is policy statements. There isn't a clear place to go to say this is the policy with respect to Who Is. It's buried in the contract in several places, I believe. And that's, I think, is problematic. A suggestion on a going forward basis is to simplify the language in the RAA, pull out the Who Is policy, make it a separate document. It's referenced from the contract, and it can change.
So you'd like it indexed?
I'm just suggesting that as a possibility, because again, as somebody who's trying to do a review of it, we have to become contract experts. Mm-hmm. To read the contract language and say, this applies, this does not apply. This piece of the contract, some of us believe, applies. Others do not. Okay. In particular, is the information, whose responsibility is it to make sure the information is accurate? Mm-hmm. Some claim it's not our job. It's the registrant's job to provide it and make sure that it's accurate. That's pretty clear in the contract. I argue it's also clear that there are other parties that are obligated to make sure that it is accurate.
We'll relay that to our contracts department for sure. So thank you.
Okay. The team's been very generous with their time. I just want to make sure that we have if we have additional questions here. Liz, is there anybody else that wanted to ask a question? And I guess after this, Akram, if you have any other issues, I know we focused on the budget here, but that your portfolio is obviously much broader than that. And so if you have any other issues you wanted to raise or present to us, that would be fine. Liz.
Hello, I'm Liz Williams. My reading of the existing new draft of the registry contract, which would apply for new TLDs, shifts the compliance burden not within the organization, and therefore no other people are necessary, but that the compliance burden sits with the applicant. So when I went through the detail of that, there was a significant change from the way in which the compliance function was treated within ICANN, and then it reversed to say the new TLD applicants are going to be responsible for their own compliance and have to warrant that they have indeed complied with their contract, and then there's a random audit process that goes through. Now, that's very different from what has happened in the past, and it would be helpful just to speak, not maybe not now, but it's a very detailed issue with respect to the new TLD contract. And if I've misread it, then that's very, very important for new TLD applicants to understand what their cost will be to run their own compliance, not dissimilar to running a financial audit and then having Arthur Anderson or whoever ICANN's auditors are that come in and... Well, whoever it is, you know what I mean. Who is it? Moss, whatever. Moss Apps, whatever their name is. So you actually bear the burden of Moss Apps' cost to then sign off that you have indeed had audited accounts and you meet the requirements for your contract. My reading of the new TLD registry contract is that that's indeed the way that you're going to do it. And I think my conversations with Dennis Jennings and other board members say that, if I understand Dennis's intention correctly, is that the compliance burden would indeed sit with the applicant, not with ICANN. So it's interesting to hear that people want people hired, but for the future, where there's a lot more TLDs under management, I would question whether that's... I see a disconnect between what has been a legacy approach and then what we would expect in the new environment with, let's say, 500 new TLDs under management. So some clarity around that would be very, very helpful.
Thank you. That's a new GTLD issue, and we will forward the concern to them. Thank you.
And as you can see, as Kevin knows firsthand, compliance is a very important issue for all of these constituencies. Even when we have a budget topic, we're talking about compliance. So I want to, unless any of you have any last... there is a question from the chat room. Excuse me, if you've got a second.
Thank you. Yeah, I just got a question in from the chat from Barry Cobb. He said, I'd like to hear from Akram what is his vision for his new role as COO and how he plans to improve ICANN's operations and go-forward strategy.
Just a minor question, but Akram, we're
No problem. I just don't want to stand between you and lunch, but I only have half an hour to discuss the changes in operations. Look, I think that after 2 months on the job, and looking at the operational and the infrastructure that we have at ICANN, we don't have anything that's, I would say, is a broken system, but definitely... we lack in the systems being up to date, which means we do a lot of things manually in the corporation, and we don't have a lot of the automation that needs to be done so that we can free up our staff to do more of the meaningful work. So instead of doing tactical stuff, doing more strategic stuff across all of the organization, whether it's HR, finance, legal, all of the stuff that we do is still pretty manual. So what I would call the plumbing in the organization it needs an upgrade, and that's what we will focus on bringing up to date. We're looking at the controls, and we would like to improve the controls as we improve the automation of the processes. So nothing that is really broken, but I think that there are a lot of improvements in this space that we can do. And I would like to look at different ways that we can actually, maybe provide some funding, some additional funding to support the different working groups to do their jobs. And I know that we continue to grow as an organization with a lot of more work to do every year. And we have to find a way to do things a little bit more efficiently without having to just move to a bigger budget every year to be able to meet the needs of the community. So I think there are a lot of challenges for the future. There are some low-hanging fruit that we can address very quickly in the infrastructure, and that's really what we're going to be focusing on. So.
Thank you. I just wanted to address the contractual compliance issue, too. And I think that that message has come through loud and clear over the last few years, actually, from this, before I started. I imagine it's from the very beginning of ICANN. But one of the things that you all did this time, which I thought was very effective, was being very specific in the suggestions rather than just saying we need to throw more money into the pile. On contractual compliance and make that, that slice of the pie grow bigger. I think that Akram and Juan and the executive team will really appreciate it when you talk about specifics, specific objective milestones, you know, whether it's the advisory group or a number of auditors or because that's I think what I know in the past we've struggled with is how do you, I mean, you could literally spend billions of dollars in compliance pretty easily, if you really, you know, to, you know, certainly hundreds of millions of dollars, if you did everything you can possibly imagine, to go after malactors. So I just want to kind of encourage that. I think maybe last time you didn't get quite the feedback that you sensed that we really did listen and read those, and I just want to make sure I do my part in communicating that you please do. I think they will really, really benefit from those specific suggestions.
Okay, well, thanks to all of you. I'd like to second, I think, what Ron said, to thank Kevin for his valiant and dedicated service. He gets a Bronze Star, and he maybe gets a Purple Heart, too, on some occasions. But we wish you all the best. And welcome to Juan and to Akram, and we hope we'll have you back at our next meeting. And certainly we look forward to building the same strong relationship that we had with your predecessor. So we're very much looking forward to that, and thank you very much for your time. And if the other two, my co-executive committee members, want to come back up to the podium, we do have a couple of more items before we move into our closed session. Okay, I know one item that we had identified, and it fits very well with the last couple of comments, was just to update folks on the proposal for improvements to the Registrar Accreditation Agreement, and this fits in well with what Bill was talking about and others. I don't have a presentation on this, but I think people are familiar with the fact that a drafting team of anointed by the GNSO Council has come up with a report that is now before the Council, and it calls for, among other things, starting a new negotiation process for improvements to the Registrar Accreditation Agreement. It lists a number of high and medium priority topics, many of which are of great concern to us. It's drawn on suggestions made by the ICANN staff, actually, and also by law enforcement, as well as by others within the ICANN structure. And it calls for a new method of negotiation that would involve observers, not just ICANN and the registrars, but observers from the affected parties, affected non-parties to the agreement, which I'm sure would include the interest represented in this room. I know this is technically on the agenda for the council meeting. I don't expect there will be any action, any formal action. Well, there may be some action taken. I don't expect that our report to be approved on Wednesday. There's obviously a lot of concern expressed. I gave a presentation on this at the GNSO Council session on Sunday. And there was concern expressed, if I can summarize it, on two fronts. One, there is very strong objection from registrars to any process that involves observers, or at least from some registrars, to any process that involves observers or non-parties being part of the negotiation. Of course, there's a range of views on the other side, but there is, I think, a lot of feeling that the last time the registrars and the staff went into a closed room and came out with an unacceptable product, which we basically had to accept, and got a promise that we'll do better next time. So now is next time. The other question that was raised, and I didn't have any answer to it because the drafting team didn't really consider it, was how would the observers be selected, or how would, if there were observers in the process, how would they be selected? So I really just wanted to update people on that and to encourage them to look at this report and to discuss within your constituencies how best to proceed, because I think I take Liz's point that in some cases some of the burden of compliance at the registry level may be shifted to applicants and an audit self-auditing process, and I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing, but as in the status quo we're in now, particularly in the legacy TLDs and particularly in the legacy thin who is TLDs, in other words, .com and .net, the registrar compliance is absolutely critical, and we do need a strong contract compliance function, as we've said several times. But we also need to have better and stronger provisions and clearer provisions in the contract that they are required to live up to on issues like proxy registrations and registrars engaged in cyber squatting, and many of these other issues. So I don't know if there's any people have any comments or questions about that. Marilyn does. I don't know if anyone else does. We can talk about them now. But Marilyn, go ahead.
I just have a I think it's maybe just a short statement and then a question, Steve, which you or someone else may be able to respond to. I participated in a PolSIP meeting in Vancouver. PolSIP is the Society for the Policing of Cyberspace. And it is primarily a gathering of enforcement representatives, senior enforcement representatives from commercial players, very large ones, some of whom are members of the BC and other parties, and law enforcement. And the GAC representative presented the RAA, the paper from the GAC on the RAA amendments. And I took note of a significant amount of consistency in several of the things that the GAC was asking for and the concerns that have come from these three constituencies individually in the past. And I guess my one of the things that was included in the GAC amendments was establishing some kind of accountability for the resellers who are affiliated with an accredited registrar but who are bypassing accountability, and the registrar is also bypassing accountability. So I wanted to mention that as a kind of an interesting point and one that I thought was very relevant. And then secondly, to say that excluding brand as strings applicants, I guess I'm very concerned about the idea that there is really no recourse. It's difficult to see what recourse would exist for a registrant if they encounter problems and there is no compliance or enforcement process stable, informed, trained, and funded at ICANN.
On your first point, let me respond that issue about resellers is on the high priority list in the report of the drafting team. In the most recent RAA, for the first time, there is a reference to resellers and to registrars being responsible for the activities of resellers. But unfortunately, the term resellers isn't defined, and some registrars have a very different view of what a reseller is than we might, and what their responsibility is. So to me, this is indicative of how flawed the product we got from the last process was. But it's on the list anyway, and I will say the request to have a definition of reseller came from a registrar representative on our drafting team. On the other one, I kind of agree with you. I don't see how you can take compliance, external compliance, out of the process, but that may be, that's a kind of a going forward issue. Let me ask if there are any other comments or questions on this topic. If not, we did have a breakfast. Oh, I'm sorry, Bill. Go ahead.
Bill Smith with PayPal. On the RAA, I hope that we are not taking out ICANN's responsibility for compliance. I did a quick look at the latest RAA dated 2009. I haven't looked at anything beyond that. And as best I can tell, it remains there. But I, again, my prior comment when the ICANN staff was in the room, it's buried in legal language and is subject to, I think, very broad interpretation. And I think it would be better to pull some of this stuff out into a policy document and make it especially clear. It does not need to be legal language if it's a policy. And it can be clear and say, ICANN has an obligation to on-contract compliance in this regard.
Yeah, I think Liz's comments actually weren't about the RAA at all. They were about the new registry agreements and what the obligation of the registry would be. But your point is well taken.
I just need to ask a point of clarification. We all do understand that when we use the term policy, we understand that that is not binding unless it is consensus policy. While if something is – this is a fact – I would be an expert on that, having been burned twice. On the other hand, if something is in a contract, that sometimes it is actually easier to get something in a contract than it is to get a PDP, which may take 18 months. And in order to be binding, it's 18 months?
Or 18 years.
Oh, sorry. in order to be binding, it's two-thirds, right? Of both houses. It's a weird vote of both houses.
Okay, this is Bill Smith, if I could come back. Then, if that is the case, and I believe that it is, to me that points to an organizational issue. Okay, this could be done another way, structurally. It could be an addendum to a contract, a codicil, any number of ways to do it that could be easier to modify than the contract itself. My point is, There needs to be a way to, from the contract language, to point to something else, typically a policy in a corporate setting, okay, that says, and you agree to, in the contract, you agree to be bound by the policies as modified or amended from time to time.
Bill, that exists already. My point was that, so that requirement exists, but for consensus policy. So that's there. But the issue then becomes getting a new policy element approved as consensus policy.
I understand. I'm talking about a different use of the word policy, okay? Not a consensus policy.
And it may need a different label.
As an example, there is a financial policy for this organization, no doubt. Okay? Is that a consensus policy that received a two-thirds vote? I doubt it. I imagine the board adopted it. Its finance committee did. So I believe this would be something it could, as a corporate entity, do on its own accord.
Well, yeah, I think we should pursue that offline. But one of the goals of the new RAA process is to get a clearer agreement so there's less dancing around about what the registrars are required to do. So there might be a number of ways that would be carried out. Christina?
I just want to second Steve's point to further emphasize it. There is no way the NCSG is going to agree to this motion that I've introduced, which is not going to pass at this meeting. But there's no way that they will support it unless we've developed a process for identifying and selecting observers that they feel is fair and equitable. Now, obviously, what they believe is fair and equitable is not necessarily what we're going to believe is fair and equitable. But my point is, please start thinking creatively about how we could go about this and what might work, and conversely, what you think would absolutely not work. And send those suggestions to Steve and I so that we can try and start pulling something together that's going to get passed in our house. Because I think, realistically speaking, we're going to have almost unanimity in our house in order to get this passed. Thanks.
Christina, this is just an off-the-cuff question here, but, you know, we've established a process, and I just want to focus on our house for a minute, but we have established a process now for nominating review team members, which has maybe some characteristics. Could we start thinking, are you thinking we would think about a process, because this may not be the only situation where we might need to come up with observers. But so your suggestion is we would begin to try to have a sort of a standardized agreement on how observers could be nominated and put forward?
Not necessarily, because I think that that would be a much longer term objective. I can tell you with some degree of certainty that the process that was used at the council level for putting forward names for the review teams will not work here. So, you know, would it be great if we could come up with something that we could apply here and further on? Absolutely. But I think realistically, in order to keep the momentum, we really need to be focusing on this particular issue.
So is there so your view, you know, maybe is it's a certain number of observers, there's certain criteria, and that's what you'd like us to start thinking about?
Absolutely.
Okay. Any other comments on the RAA topic? If not, before we move into our closed session, we did have a breakfast meeting this morning with the with number of members of the ICANN board and senior staff, and I know many of you were there. One issue that was brought up there and that has already been a lot of discussion of, and I just wanted to flag it because I hope you can take this up in your constituency meetings. Last Friday, ICANN posted its latest version of the economic study relating to new GTLDs. And, of course, we weren't able to include that on this agenda since it didn't come out till 72 hours ago or something. It is now on the ICANN site for public comment, and to the extent that I've been able to determine the close date of the public comment, it seems to be Friday because it's on the same page with all the other new GTLD material. And therefore, I would encourage you both individually in your companies, but if it's possible to do it through the constituencies, to at least make a very brief comment and send it in to the public comment forum. I think it would be useful. And I know from my perspective, the fact that this economic study seems to exist in a parallel universe to the whole new GTLD process and seems to have no impact on what's in the new GTLD guidebook is very troubling. And the fact that the ICANN board still publicly is stating that they're preparing to vote on the proposed final guidebook as early as Friday without essentially without having considered anything that's in this economic study is also troubling. So I just want to flag that issue as something you may want to add to your constituency agendas. We couldn't, I'm sure, unless you're a lot more clairvoyant than I am, you don't have it on your agendas yet, but because it just came out last Friday night. But I would encourage the constituencies to address this in their meetings. If people have other observations or comments from the breakfast this morning, this would be a good time to share them. And I think Marilyn has one, and Christina has one. And does anybody else? Ron? And we'll use that cue.
I'm going to comment on this, but I want to put a placeholder down. We also need to discuss briefly, and I want to introduce the topic, and then we'll come back to it. In Brussels, at the close of our breakfast, the board asked us, the chairman of the board, particularly supported by Dennis Jennings, one of our outgoing board members, asked us as a group to consider whether the breakfast that we have should continue, whether how often it should continue, and what form of interaction we should have with the board. They did not include the term senior staff, but our breakfast does include a large number of the senior staff. So we had a consultation on that, a discussion on that within the breakfast this morning. It is very much a live topic, a very important one. And I think within each of your constituencies, you should take that topic up and treat it very seriously. then we need to come back together as a CSG, and we'll probably start with the leadership and figure out how to keep going back and forth between the members on what proposals we want to put forward, because there's a strong wind to completely reconstruct how the interaction happens and how frequently it happens. Mm-hmm. So having said that, I want to make a follow-up comment to Steve's comment about the economic study. The reality is that the staff are in the unfortunate position, and it is unfortunate for them, that they are literally analyzing and subjectively trying to incorporate any comments that they hear, whether they're in constituencies, they're in working groups, they're in the hall, blah, 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 blah. They come in writing and feeding those into the board on a daily basis, which is a very difficult situation for the staff and very difficult for us. And the board seems to be planning on, the question is up in the air on what decision the board they will make on Friday, But the fact that they are not providing adequate time to take comments and consider what I think is new information, that's my perspective, in the economic study, I would just think the constituencies need to be discussing what their views are about the process and whether the board is actually fulfilling its obligation, as it is required to in the bylaws, to take into account new information and to adequately respond to it. But I think that's probably a constituency discussion.
Thank you. It's Ron Andrew speaking. I just wanted to put a sharper point on what Marilyn brought up vis-a-vis what the board's thinking is for breakfast. As I heard Peter Dengate Thrush this morning finish up, he said he's viewing this in a very different way, and that there will be a meeting where we will go into their meeting room and sit with them, get our hour, and leave, then comes another group. And that the social elements will be something else, and people will compete for dinners and breakfasts. So I think that's a very important issue. It seems to me that decision's already kind of been taken, and we need to make sure that we come back with a strong voice, because I think that the communications we had this morning were unfiltered in an informal environment, and this is the only time we get to have the board exclusively. So we need to be very strong on that point. The second issue has to do with public comments. Last night I had occasion to meet with Carla Valenti, who was doing exactly that. She was going back to now collate a bunch of and summarize public comments. And I lamented the fact that we comment all day long, and we continue to put them in. And what's happened now is the staff has just worn us down, so people don't bother to even to put comments anymore. And, in fact, Steve went to the microphone yesterday and said, we've commented on this particular topic multiple times, and we've been ignored every time, so I'm assuming I already know the answer to this question. So when I had said that, Carla said, please, please, please make your comments. Do add those comments in. The board does read those comments. It's important that we comment. And if we don't comment, they view that as tacit approval. So let's please, even if it's two sentences, we can all get in there personally or from our constituency. Let's get them on the board. Thank you.
Okay, Christina, and then.
Things, and I apologize for being fast, but I have to actually leave for a moment. First, I thought I heard Peter say constituency, and if he did in fact say that, and he did in fact mean constituency, then I'm not as concerned about having separate meetings. But I do think it would be difficult, given that we don't always have the same perspective on issues, to try and cram all three of our constituencies into a one-hour time period. Second, if staff are excluded in the future, then let's have a breakfast for them. Easy solution. Third, if it is in fact going to be the case that there will be this whole kind of new and improved way of interacting, fine, let's play the game. Let's just make sure that we come up with the most interesting, most fun event, and you know, best location, et cetera, so that they'll want to come. I mean, if that's how it's going to go, why not? We'll have fun too.
So I just want to make one. I just want to make one point. Peter has strongly held views. Several of the other board members do not yet concur with him.
Okay.
Great.
And he's leaving.
So I think for the CGS breakfast, it's a very good chance for us to convey our voice to the board, but. That breakfast meeting to be continued, it's very important that is also beneficial for the board. So probably I will discuss this matter in the constituent meeting, but we have to think seriously think about that point.
Thank you. Aisha, did you have a comment?
Thank you. Aisha Hassan, ICC from the BC. I think that what I'm hearing from colleagues is that we see what the utility of this breakfast is, and we want to make sure that we are going to maintain our ability to have the kind of interaction we want. My sense from talking to a few board members is that we also probably should be open-minded to the format. I think Christina's right that there is an opportunity to do things differently and make it attractive, so it's just a no-brainer that they want to be there. I also think that there is some utility in just testing a new format for one of the future meetings in the near future, and if that doesn't work properly, then we can move forward. But keeping a very strong message to the board that the constituencies, and I would like clarification because my sense is some of the board members think the CSG would meet with them for 1 hour, which I agree with Christina and others, that would not be the most constructive thing. Now, I do understand the pressure that they are under with new constituencies and how are they going to be with everybody else, et cetera. Maybe we should just try to work to make sure, A, our priorities are heard, we're going to get what we need in whatever format it might take to experiment, but three, to make sure that we're not accepting a format that isn't going to comply with what we really need. Thanks.
I'll recognize myself. Thank you, Aisha. I agree with you. We need to be very flexible. And it's just somewhat ironic that the reason we have a breakfast is because we had the other format before, which was that the board came to see the cross-constituency rather than us coming to see them. So that's a difference. But they came in, and the meetings were terrible. And they felt very much on the spot, and it was everything. It just didn't work, and so that's why we moved to the breakfast several years ago. But it's definitely worth seeing whether we can make it more attractive for both sides.
Just a thought. I mean, there's some thinking that can go into this, but also it depends on the room. If we're going to have a meeting with them in a room like this, it will be less constructive than if we're meeting in a room where we're all around a table. I mean, little things like this can actually be helpful towards our goals.
Just real quickly, historically, so you guys know, we've had three approaches in meeting with the board. One of them literally involved the entire board and the general counsel coming in and sitting in a row in front of the three constituencies, and the only people who spoke were typically the chair and the CEO and the general counsel. And the board members found that very uncomfortable. The other board members found that very uncomfortable. They didn't like it. They complained. They wanted to participate. They wanted more interaction. The second approach was for individual board members to be assigned to constituencies to sit in the constituency and participate. That is totally petered out, if I could use that term. You know, I don't want to spend more time on this because I know we have to go and into our private session. But maybe we need a kind of a mix, Steve, of people from each constituency to do a little brainstorming and come back.
Bill, you'll get the last word on this.
Okay. Bill Smith, PayPal. To Marilyn's point, I've been involved in organizations that have done all of these. From my perspective, the breakfast actually works the best. The one thing I would say is when we get to the more formal part, the today's three items, we tend to lose people. So my suggestion would be to stress the informal nature as opposed to the formal stuff. And if the board is going to choose to sit for 8 or 10 hours while different constituencies, organizations, and what have you troop through, I think they will find very quickly that that is an extremely difficult thing to do, having done exactly that. So,
okay. This concludes the open portion of our meeting, so I would like to ask that the Adobe room be closed. I'd like to ask that the telephone connection be closed.
The telephone connection is our members, and so is the Adobe room. We only gave the number up to them.
Okay. Our Chris, can we confirm that everybody in the Adobe room is a member? Why don't you look at that? But in any case, I want to thank the observers for coming and for participating, and we encourage you to consider, if you are eligible for it, joining one of our three constituencies, and I'm sure the leadership of each constituency would be glad to talk with you about how to do that have any questions. So let me ask that the that those who are not members of one of the three constituencies, please leave at this time. And then we'll give you a couple minutes to do that, and then we will start up again with the remainder short additional agenda. Okay, let me confirm that everyone, could everyone who's a member of one of the three constituencies in the room please raise your hand? Okay, I see a few people in the back who...
Actually, that's over stop their member.
Well, some people may not know if they're members or not. Okay. And I understand that we can keep the telephone connection open. Thank you. I'm sorry about that. Okay, well, let me just talk briefly about the issues we need to discuss here. We've been spending a lot of time this week, the leadership of the constituencies and the CSG Executive Committee, in dialogue or multi-log with our counterparts in the non-